Come one, come all, come gather around. Come hear tales both lost and found. Finally a show not about true crime. It's David and Michael's story time.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another exciting episode of Story Time. With me as usual is your lover of all things animal. Well, that's Michael Santel.
And since I've last seen him, the one of us that needs a haircut because his hair is looking rather shabby. Well, that's David Miller.
I got a haircut like 3 weeks ago. It's like...
It looks like you need it again. It looks like this from the last time we did a podcast, I'm telling you, from that time to this time, you're just looking shabby. I apologize.
For the record, we are recording this episode about, what is it, maybe 30 minutes after the last one?
I pooped the dog, I made some coffee, I got Goose Girl living in my bones, but now I am ready to meet some PTSD kids.
I'll tell you, there's no Goose Girls in this one.
They don't acquire a Goose Morph yet?
No, I don't think so.
They gotta get
some
Goose.
Well, not in this book especially. No, there are no geese in this book.
Yeah. I know that if I was an Animorph, it would be like a Pokemon adventure. Every day I'd be like, I acquired a chipmunk. Yeah, every day it would be me getting a new thing.
Okay. Well, so last time, do you remember what happened last time? Last time was book number 36, The Mutation.
Yes.
They turned into killer whales.
They turned into killer whales.
They went down in the
ocean.
Oh,
David, yes. We found out about fucked up avatar people live under the water.
Avatar Atlanteans.
That are incestuous, are dying off, are blue bloods. Sometimes they
blue
procreate.
Bloods like Tom, was it Tom Selleck? Is that?
No, not like Tom Selleck. Like inbred people from England, blue bloods, like royalty. Just like the Prince and the Pauper.
They were known as the Nartek. By the way, those people.
The Nartek, that's right. Oh, that's what I spray in my nose for my allergies as well. We found out all about them. Terrible things happen. The children are just aware of these people at the bottom of the ocean that we'll never speak of again. Yeah. I always want the Nartek to show back up. I do remember all about the Nartek adventure. I feel like we are due for them just going to, like, summer camp. Like, aren't we due for, like, a field trip book where it's, like, a fun romp?
Yes, but here's what I'll tell you. We're about to start book 37. There's a total of 54 books, plus the two other, like, side books we have to do. We still have Megamorphs 4 and the Elemist Chronicles. You know, we are in the last third of the entire series, so there's a little less wiggle room for, like... doesn't matter type, you know what I mean? Like,
sure.
Now we still have, with that said, we have about 20 books left in the entire series.
David, I'm kind of sad. You know what's funny is when we started this, it feels like it was never going to end. Now that the end is in sight, I feel like we need to put these books.
But 20 books is still like a decent, with our track record of how quickly we get them out, it's still a while.
We'll be done by 2025. I feel like we should give him some sort of Viking burial. Or we need to, like,
Well, you gotta see what happens. Oh, I see. Like, the actual physical books?
Yes, the physical books we should light on fire.
Yeah, no, I'm gonna keep these physical books and not destroy them. That's the first plan. But yeah, you don't even know what's gonna happen towards the end of the series here, so, you know.
I don't know. And my fear, I'm gonna let you know right now, because funny enough, people that we know will ask me, what do I think? I do have a fear that one of these, that some...
Who's asking you what you think is going to happen, but they don't ask me?
I saw at...
Sure.
Oh, he asked me about it.
Yeah.
He was like, what's going to happen to
those
kids?
He doesn't ask... I guess they wouldn't ask me because they know that I might actually know, and I can't tell them.
Now, not anything to do with this, but I met friend of the pod, Kurt Maloney's new girlfriend.
Oh, okay.
I
hope this episode ages well. You know what I mean?
It'll be fine. The relationship is new. But I met her less than 24 hours ago.
Oh, okay.
From when we recorded the last podcast. It's probably sooner to that one than to this one. I walked into the party. They were standing in a kitchen. I made everyone in the kitchen hug me. I did not hoe her. I said, please, my name's Michael Santel. Give me a hug. Kurt then introduced me to her. And I was like... Kurt was like, he's my friend. And I was like, yeah, but I don't see him enough. I need to do more with Kurt.
Yeah, yeah.
And she was like, oh, I know who you are because I heard it on Storytime.
Yeah, you
and
did.
And I said, what? And it turns out Kurt, to promote himself to her, had here listened to the episode.
To
I
that
guess,
episode?
Of him telling stories
and
stuff
like
that.
Yeah,
yeah,
to his episode, obviously. Which, obviously, to promote himself, he wouldn't have her listen to an episode that's just you and I. Like, that doesn't
correct,
make any sense.
Correct, yeah, yeah. He's not like, you should know about my
You've got
to
hear part
friend.
Two of the Andalite Chronicles, yeah, I swear yeah. to God.
that being said, that also is my mom's favorite episode.
The Kurt
so,
one, yeah, yeah.
Mom, do not date Kurt. He is a taken man. Yep. He has a lady in his life.
Yep.
Leave him alone.
Yep. Yep, yep, yep.
Speaking of being left alone.
And speaking of ladies.
Oh, yeah, yes, wonderful. What is the title of Book 37?
Book 37 is called The Weakness.
The Weakness.
And I gotta tell you, with a sigh on my breath, that this is one of those titles where it's like, well, that feels kind of a stretch, maybe. Or you can, like, apply it thematically to a couple things, but it's not like they're like, hey, there's a place on the Yerk ships where if you touch it, it blows. Like, it's not like a... You know, there's not like a weakness that they...
You took my first prediction right out of my mouth.
So, I'll show you the cover of the book here.
Ooh, this that's one, a cheetah.
It's Rachel turning into a cheetah, yeah. And then the inside cover is you got some cheetahs running in a field. There's an Andalite there in the background. There's a hawk in the sky.
I believe I made this joke last time. That picture looks like some sort of like Scientology, like when the lion lays with the lamb.
Sure.
When the Andalites and the cheetahs can live in peace and harmony on this
sure.
earth.
Now,
that's
to be fair,
know.
When the lion lays with the lamb isn't Scientology. That's the Book of Revelation in the Bible. But
yes, yeah. I hear you. I'm saying when there is blue fucking horse creatures there.
There you go. Now we're there.
Right,
okay.
Right. Yeah, and for a gold piece, I could probably get a knacker to kill one of those Andalites for me, but for another day.
That is a reference to the last episode,
yes,
if you
yes,
didn't listen.
Yeah. I feel like we're going to find out, like, the weakness is going to be, it's either going to be, like, one of their siblings or, like, their parent or something like that. Like, oh, that's a human weakness. But I also feel like it could be... the weakness of, like, wanting to carry on. Like, they might be given some sort of option, like, you can be, this can all be over. All of this can be done if you just do this thing. And the weakness is then, like, do we give into this and not have to deal with this anymore? Or do we continue to be strong and watch more of our friends die, more of our mothers get taken away,
right.
more of the loss of eighth grade dances?
Sure.
So that's where I'm going to go.
Okay.
I'm real excited to find out how they get these cheetah morphs. And we will be introduced to a new alien, like a new alien will show up.
Okay.
And they'll be like, oh no, this thing's crazy. They handle it, no problem.
Interesting. Okay. I like all of these. Some are super right and some are not quite. The overall thing that you said in the beginning of that with like the theme of what the weakness is, I love it. You're like a book too early on that.
Sure.
Field, you know what I mean?
Well, I know, you know, in terms of tropes of fiction, there are some things that haven't, like, it's funny because in the David Chronicles,
yeah.
we had, like, literally them holding a gun to a human's head.
Yeah.
Like, we haven't had that happen yet. It's going to happen.
Hmm.
You know what I mean? At a certain point, these things
I can't
are going to
start
happening.
I've already read, we're going to go through this book 37. I have already read book 38. I read it yesterday. So, like... I'm excited to tell that one to you a lot, just because I feel like it's a big moment, because there's a... I was explaining it earlier today, actually, and I was just like, there's a moment, a thing that happens that really just sort of rocks the mindset of everybody. And I can't wait to explore that with you. But
well,
that's not today, so today
Let's
is
explore
another...
explore yeah. this boring book that you gotta tell me. Let's hop
not
into...
boring. I will say, without giving any other, like, no hint, I was, not in a bad way, I think it's intentional, I was very frustrated with this book. Like,
yeah.
Not narratively like, oh, this is a bad story. I just mean, like, characters do things you don't agree with, and I'm like, ah! You know, like, that kind of shit. So, yeah, we'll get into that.
This is what we call a learning chapter.
Oh, boy.
So, let's get to
people
learning,
People are
going to
learn today.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, like I showed you, Rachel was on the cover. So, this is from the point of view of Rachel in this book. Our resident Xena warrior princess, as Marco likes to call her.
A hot show. It used to be Kevin Sorbo's Hercules into that on Saturday nights. That's where, in the fifth grade, that's how I'd spend my Saturday nights.
Yeah, that's good shit. I remember. All right. So in our intro, Rachel does, she, you know, gives kind of our kind of normal little intro. Her name is Rachel. She makes a couple comments about how, like, I know, you probably know, like, four Rachels. There's, like, five in my fucking grade. Like, you know, like, Rachel's a very popular name for my, like, kids my age, right? Which is super true.
Not to mention that hit Rachel on that TV show Friends.
We have two, yeah, and she even says, like, you might know the name from Friends, and you might know the name from the Bible. So, like, the, So, we got really? Our good friends references in there. What's she doing with her hair this season anyway, I think is literally a line in this book.
Just like that story in the Bible you told me about that guy's long hair.
Yep. So, the first thing we learn is that Jake, Prince Jake, our leader Jake, is out of town for a few days, close to a week, on, like, family shit.
That's the book. That's what I was talking about, the summer camp trip that we don't get to see. So I'm sure Jake is having to call and check in with things then.
Well, he's just, like, gone for, like, a week. And they're just like, well, what, you know, like, okay, I guess we're just going to, like, chill. There's no, like, pressing mission. There's no, like, anything. And Tom is not on that family trip with Jake. So, like, there's not, like, that danger, like, last time where it was like, oh my god, when they leave, like, is Jake gonna have to fucking murder Tom? Like, you know, like...
Does Tom have a job now or something that keeps him in town?
I think so.
He works
something
at
like
the Dairy
that.
Queen?
Yeah, whatever it
okay.
is. And they don't really go too much into detail about, like, what it is Jake has gone doing. Just that it's, like, a family thing, but it's not... Because Rachel is Jake's cousin, but it's not that side of the family. It's the other side of the family.
Okay, mom's side of the family.
Shit, who is it? Yeah, I think so. I think it's Jake's dad that is related to... Rachel's mom, I think. I think that's how it is.
We need a family tree.
I know. I can't remember who's what. All right. So they're in the barn, I think, and they're arguing about what to do. Those that are left, not Jake, because Tobias has stumbled onto / found Visser 3's current feeding spot where he, like, goes and runs in a field to, like, feed as an Andalite because they change where he does. Ever since that one where Axe found out where he went and then morphed into a rattlesnake and bit him and almost killed him, and then, like, the Yerk left his head, and then War Prince Alaran begged Axe, please kill me before they come and get me and save me and put him back in my head, and Axe couldn't bring himself to do it, and then they did recapture Visser 3. Ever since
question.
Then, yeah.
I know that the Yerk has to feed, but he also has to feed the Andalite body.
Well, yeah, his Andalite body needs to feed, otherwise he'll starve.
Okay, got it. Okay.
Yeah, so this is feeding for the Andalite body, not for the Yerk, like Kandrona was, right?
Okay.
Ever since that rattlesnake incident, which was like book fucking 14 or something, like a long-ass time ago. I have to look it up. I can't remember... Someone asked me recently, how long has it been in-universe since the first book? And honestly, I think it's been, like, less than a year.
Yeah, for sure.
It's been, because like, maybe 9 months. Like
we've had no conversations about graduations.
Or summer vacation. Like
right. None of those plans and all the things. And we also even
They don't have their driver's permits, like their learner's permits even. Like, you know,
But we also haven't had anything like winter break. Mm-hmm. Right? So it's a couple of months.
There have been times where they, like, wait a week, wait a few days, wait a week. So, like amongst all these stories. So I like to think it's been... minimum 6 months, but I think it's been more than that.
We haven't had a Christmas episode.
Closer to a year, but not quite. So maybe like 7 to 9 months is my guess. But that's all, kind of a guess because we don't really talk about it too much. But they're debating what to do because they're like, well, they changed the location of where Visser 3 feeds every few days so that they can't get sort of ambushed like Axe did before, right? And so they're like, well, so we know where he is now. Do we strike now? Because if we wait for Jake to get back, they're going to change it again and we'll have lost it. So what do we do? And a few of them, namely Axe and Cassie, are relatively hesitant to act without Jake. Well, who's going to lead us? We don't have a leader. Like,
we don't have a full team. We're also down a member, one of the strong
members. And that member is the one who makes the decisions. So what do we do, right?
Rachel's like, I can make this decision. I'm a leader.
So they start talking about it. And Cassidy has an idea. It was like, well, if we're going to do something for Visser 3, I have an idea. We just got some cheetahs at the gardens, and they're super fast. What we would want for a mission like this is to be able to get in, hit him, and get out before any problems happen and things go sideways.
Quick trip to Busch Gardens, couple of roller coasters, grab a cheetah, off to mission.
So they decide, okay, we're going to do it.
David, sometimes when I do a thumbs up, it pops up in the window.
Oh, interesting.
You mentioned that in the last
episode. Yeah, earlier you like said a thing and like balloons went up.
Yeah, what the fuck are you listening to us, Google? Where is...
Now we're both throwing two thumbs up at the fucking camera and nothing's happening.
It just happens sometimes, and I don't know what it's doing it, but it's really throwing me off.
Get back to it. So, I know you said you wanted to see how they acquire the cheetahs. It's another one of those instances where we're just going to skip to... Hey, we've got them now.
Great. Okay. Thanks, kids.
So we cut to basically the valley where Visser 3 feeds. Like, we're just going to it. Like, this is like scene two of the book is like, here we are on the mission. We decided we can't let this opportunity pass us by.
It's so interesting that without Jake's guidance, they were so quickly able to make this decision to execute this hastily put together mission.
Yeah. So they go to this, valley, you know, this field. Tobias is staying a hawk, air support always, and the rest of them are cheetahs. At this point, we get some fun facts about cheetahs because K.A. Applegate loves to throw these fucking actual animal facts in this shit. I love it.
Cheetahs can run up to 65 miles per hour.
60 to 70 miles per hour is their top speed. 0 to 45 in 2.5 seconds. From sitting still to 45 miles an hour in less than 3 seconds.
Crazy.
At top speed, they can travel 100 feet in 1 second. Think about that. Like, think about walking heel to toe for 100 steps. Okay. Turning around and looking where you started, and then think about that distance in 1 second.
Crazy. That's absolutely insane. Superhuman ability if you could do that.
Yeah. And in this morph, Rachel is feeling very confident about this mission. She's like, nothing can fucking touch us. We got this, bro.
Okay. You know? Okay. Yeah. Did a little too cocky.
Visser 3 lands in his ship, and they wait, hiding in the brush, right? Until he's a little bit of a distance from the ship. Tobias is like keeping watch to like wait for the right moment. And then as soon as he's, like, far enough away from the ramp to the ship, it's go time. And everybody fucking sprints.
Is it like Disney's Fantasia, where he's like, ba-da-da-da-da-da-da, he's, like, running around the forest, and the kids have, like, Power Man 5000 playing in their head? Yeah. This is like when worlds collide!
And they just, one after the other, like, basically at the same time, sprint at him. And it starts okay. And they like come in and like Rachel hits first and bam. And then Axe hits him and bam. And then Cassie hits him and bam. And they're just like running by and swiping, knocking him off balance, hitting him with some claws. Starts all right. Hork, Bajir are now on their way and running, but like they're back at the ship running their way. And then the Hork, Bajir eventually get there as they're like kind of like circling around and coming back to hit him again and again. Hork, Bajir get there and they start fighting the Hork, Bajir. And then after like a little bit of scuffle, the cheetah's endurance starts to run low because they are natural sprinters, but they cannot do the marathon, right?
They're not long distance runners. They're short.
And so the fight
starts... short distance runners, if you will.
And so the fight starts going bad. They start getting cut up. They start getting sliced in ways they don't like. and then they,
What are the ways people like to be sliced? If you're like, I'll take an orange slice.
You're going to have to talk to people who like that about that, you know?
Get your hair pulling hands away from me, please.
Then they get hit by something else that is like too fast for them to see. It's like blurring around the zone and like...
A space cheetah?
Battering them all around, basically. And I have the description of it for you. It was a creature. Now I can see that clearly. Not a machine, but flesh and blood. A bizarre creature able to zip across the grass like a high-speed insect. Like a bullet fired from a .30-30. A hunting rifle. Only about as tall as a gazelle. four lanky, skinny legs, a thin but strong-looking tail, as long as its body, that flicked and twitched even when the creature's legs weren't moving. A pigeon chest, high and rounded. A head shaped like a custom-made aerodynamic bike racing helmet. Tight curved face, like half a smooth ball. Skull that swept back from the rim of the ball to the pointy triangle, like an ice cream cone on its side, except the cone was flattened. But what really caught and held my attention was the fact that the thing was covered in blue fur and had no mouth and sported two thin, weak-looking arms, like an andalite, like Axe. So,
ooh, is this some sort of hybrid or something like that?
Well, so it stops attacking and then goes, like, back to stand next to Visser 3. And they take that opportunity to, like, peace the fuck out.
Mm-hmm.
And sprint away. And then they, like, hide, kind of, and then they morph to birds and they start to fly away. And as they do, they listen to this, like, thought-speak conversation happening between Visser 3 and whatever this thing is. Because they're speaking in thought-speak, but they, like Visser 3 always does, speaks non-privately, you know, like, sure. Just out in the open. The Visser 3 refers to this creature as Inspector, like, as its, like, title.
Like a dog.
And it, the Inspector, brags about how he should call it Counselor 13. Like, hey, don't call me Inspector. You should be addressing me as Counselor 13. And Visser 3 is like, oh, but you're not on the council yet.
Oh, it's a new recruit. Someone, so you remember, moving up the ranks.
During the Visser book, two Animorph episodes ago, when Marco's mom was on trial, at a certain point, all of the Council of 13, like, their holograms went away to, like, discuss the case. And when they came back, there were only 12, not 13.
And
Visser 1 was like, ooh, I bet those were some violent discussions. You know what I mean? So now we see there is a candidate for that 13th council member.
And I could assume, based on these numbers, that it was council member 14 that now
there's
moves
only 13.
Into this spot.
Oh, yeah, well, yeah. Well, so it would
right,
be...
but there's like a... Yeah, there's a lesser council.
It's some inspector. Like, some inspector. Which is not a Visser. Remember, Visser 1 is the highest rank except for the Council of 13. So this is some other rank, an inspector of some kind. So, you know how, like, in the military they have, like, the generals and the colonels and stuff, and then on the side there's, like, the intelligence division, and, like,
sure,
and, like,
right.
They have, like, their own fucking side hierarchy. Yeah. So the creature is called a Garatron, and is a new host species that the Yerks are sort of discovering / gathering.
We just discovered this last week.
And it's fucking fast. It's fucking great.
They're called Gravitrons?
Garatrons.
Garatrons.
Yeah. Sounds like a Digimon, right?
Yeah. Its description you gave sounds like a Pokemon.
Yeah.
Like, sounds like some of the legendary Pokemon.
Yeah. So they peace out of there, and they get back to the barn, and it's time to talk about what the fuck just happened. So Axe seems pretty touchy about noticed similarities between the Garatron and the Andalites, but he doesn't say any more about that. And the vibe I get is, like, maybe he's, like, hiding something, but at the same time, it's kind of like, this could just be, I think Cassie even brings up this, like, this could just be totally unrelated to Andalites. Like, convergent evolution is a real thing.
Sure, but he's unhappy about it, like, another
species. He doesn't
species.
Like being compared to something else, because Andalites are so proud of being Andalites.
Sure.
Like, anything else is like, oh, like an Andalite. He's like, not like an Andalite. You know what
not
I mean?
Not like an Andalite.
Yeah. They let themselves get captured by the Yerks. They're obviously not like Andalite. You know what
right,
I mean? Like,
right.
Something like that. Which is why Visser 3 is often referred to as the Abomination. They're so touchy about that.
Oh.
Andalites hate the fact that Visser 3, like, exists in his host body.
Because he got
because
one.
The fact that it exists is an insult to all Andalites everywhere.
Yeah, take those insults.
Yeah. Tobias points out that the Inspector and the Visser were clearly antagonistic to each other. Like, through their conversation, they do not like each other. And Visser 3, even with, like, oh, you're not on the council yet. And yeah, when you are, I'll definitely refer to you as Counselor 13. But until then, you know.
You're still, like, Inspector. Yeah. You're still Inspector Gadget.
Were you going to say Clouseau?
That's way too hard for me to say.
It's also probably, while a more, like, important reference in, like, detective fiction, a less recognizable call-out than Inspector Gadget. More people will recognize Inspector Gadget than Clouseau.
People love Matthew Broderick. They know his body of work. They know that movie.
See, now you think Inspector Gadget, you think the movie, and I literally think the cartoon, like the OG Inspector Gadget.
Go Gadget Helicopter! Yeah,
Penny,
that guy.
Penny and Brain, man. All right. So what they figure is that the inspector must be evaluating Visser 3. That's the reason they're there. And like the vibe that they got from the inspector, like fighting them, but then stopping before like killing them or anything, and then going back to kind of like smart mouth Visser 3, is clearly like, oh, the council must be like, because Visser 3 just got assigned like, hey, you have to like continue this Earth invasion. Don't fuck it up, right? So right. They must be like keeping a closer eye on Visser 3 and how things are going with the presence of this inspector. So Rachel thinks this is a perfect opportunity to discredit Visser 3 to his superiors if they like make known that like, man, these Andalite bandits are not under control by Visser 3. That's going to look very badly on Visser 3. And this is the time when they're grading that, so this would be a great opportunity. Marco and Tobias think they should wait for Jake to come back. They're like, I like the idea. We should wait till we're full strength and we have Jake. Cassie points out that they are wasting time by arguing without a leader. And Rachel suggests, like, exactly, so we need to choose a temporary leader.
They're going to cast lots? They're going to do a secret vote? What's the plan?
Cassie and Tobias both do not want to be leader and pull their names out of the running. Axe is like, someone's like, well, maybe Axe. And he's like, I will do whatever the group wants. You know, clearly, like, yeah, if you want to put me in charge. But then Marco's like, well, this mission is probably going to need some, like, extensive knowledge on human society. So Axe, I'm so sorry, but you are disqualified from leadership here. And he's like, whatever. So it's down to Marco and Rachel.
Both of whom have showed leadership in the past. Sure. And I would say at this point, you could go with either one. Marco has been very
confident. It's a style choice. Marco is plot, scheme, plan, wait till we know, and then act. Rachel is like, fuck it, let's go, balls to the wall, pound the wall down, and let's go, right?
Yeah.
So at that point, when it comes down to then it's Marco and Rachel, Marco goes, all right, well, fuck this then. If we're going to vote on who the leader is, and you have, between me and Rachel, and you have Rachel's best friend, Cassie, Rachel's boyfriend, Tobias, and Axe, who's abstaining from the vote because he's sworn to Prince Jake. Like,
this, I'm not this even going to try to convince. This election is a sham. Yeah, this is a puppet government regime.
So he literally is like, fine, I pull out too. Congratulations, Rachel. You're the new leader. Right?
Yeah.
So that night, Rachel can't sleep because she is thinking about the plan that they have and the first raid they're going to do. Basically, the plan is many consecutive attacks publicly on all known Yerks in the city.
All at once?
Well, like one right after the other. Bam, 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 bam. Just like everyone we know who's at least a little bit higher important in the Yerks, we are going to, middle of the day, in public, fuck them up. And deliver a message that, like, this zone is not under the control of the Yerks.
I like the idea that they just, like, hit them with cheetahs. Like, just hit them at 75 miles per hour. I know that's not going to be what the plan is, but that, to me, would be, like, the great full circle of all of this.
Yeah. So she's, like, it's, like, the night before. She's having trouble sleeping. She's thinking about what it means to be a leader. She's very in her head about it. She's very in her head to the point about, like, She's like, I know I can do this. I'm fucking great. But at the same time, she's like, but what if I fuck up? You know, it's easy leader stuff. Easy, you know.
One of the reasons why Jake has been the leader and has stayed the leader because he has removed this burden from people's thoughts. And one of the things that has allowed Rachel to be so good at her job is that she just goes balls to the wall and knows someone else is figuring out the logistics of it.
And if Jake, in the middle of something, when Rachel's like, I'm going to charge through the wall, and Jake goes, no, don't, then she goes, okay, and then she doesn't. But if Jake's not there to stop her, she's going through the wall, right? Like, you know what I mean? So Tobias shows up, like, to her window, like he does often, and they talk for a bit before they leave very early in the morning for the TV station that they are going to hit first.
They're going to hit that guy.
For the morning news, because the host of the morning news is a controller that they know of. She asks him if he was going to vote for her if it did, in fact, come to a vote. If Marco hadn't pulled himself out, would you have voted for me?
He would have.
He doesn't answer. He's like, ooh, we should get going. The plan's going to start soon, so we should leave. And she's like, I am noticing that you did not answer that question. So at the TV station, Rachel's like, all right, battle morphs, let's go in hard and fast. And Marco is like, hey, what if we scoped out the place first? We don't know the layout of the inside and what's going on in there.
Classic Marco leadership. That's exactly what he would have done if he was the leader.
And Rachel gets a little pushy and kind of bully about it. And basically is like, hey, you wanted me to be the leader? I'm going to be the leader. I'm making the call. Battle morphs now. Let's go. And they're like, fine, you know?
Cue the gorilla. Cue the bear. Cue the bird.
So they bust in through a door, like a side door, and they start charging through the halls, sending people scrambling, knocking copiers over, fucking up computers, just chaos in the TV studio.
They flip over the powdered creamer in the air. It looks like snow.
Cassie warns to go easy on, like, the people in here because, A, most of them are probably not controllers. And B, we don't want to hurt people, right? Like,
right.
Just in general. Even if they are controllers, we don't want to, like, kill them because they're people, right? So they crash onto the set of the morning news, where the controller host is, like, doing a read-through. And during the whole fracas, a group of about 20 adults and kids who are, like, on an employee-guided tour of the TV studio are also present that they did not know were going to be present. And they start fucking freaking out. And Cassie is like, all right, that's damage. We've done our job. Let's leave. This is getting too unpredictably chaotic. Right?
Sure.
And Rachel goes, no, not yet. We're not done. And here's vaguely from that group of visitors as they're, like, tearing up the studio. People are like, oh, no, help, Grandpa. And then has, but we don't, like, that's just happening over there. We're, like,
Grandpa's having a heart attack.
So she has Marco grab the controller, and Rachel, like, gets in her face as a bear, which is terrifying, and says... the controller herself says, you don't scare me, Andalite, she hissed. Oh, but I do, I said. I have a message for Visser 3. Are you ready to hear it? She said nothing, just drew back from my teeth. Here's the message for the Visser and all your brother Yerkes. Go home. Can you remember that? Tell him we said, go home. I nodded to Marco and he released her. She straightened her clothes and glared hatred at us. We were in the studio for less than 5 minutes. By the time we left, there was no studio. We bailed, ran, demorphed well away from the police cars, ambulance, and news vans that we saw racing towards the site. I believe the first raid met its goal, Axe commented. I can't believe we had a live audience, Cassie said, laughing. It was more than we could have hoped for, in one way. Suddenly, she didn't seem so sure. Maybe it would have been better if we'd known they were in the building, gotten them out first somehow. There was a moment of weird silence, like everyone was suddenly thinking really hard about those visitors. I saw one guy, Tobias began, silent until now. He fell. He was kind of old. What if he had a heart attack or whatever?
Yeah.
I felt a chill, something like fear or guilt, and then the chill was chased away by a hot rush of something else. Self-defense? I don't know. Something. Yeah, what if he just tripped? Come on, casualties happen, I said coldly. We didn't mean for the guy to get so scared. Besides, for all we know, he's a controller too. My team looked at me, and that weird silence was still hanging around. But they had a job to do, and they'd just have to toughen up and do it. The raid was a success, I said. End of story. Now we have a schedule. Next stop, bookstore.
We're 37 books in. Not once has any of these alien people grabbed their heart and clutched it as the attack was happening. That's not a response they have received. So I think this is going to have some comeuppance come later on.
Comeuppance?
Comeuppance?
It's comeuppance.
It's not come on muffins. It's not like, oh, these muffins are ruined. Somebody did something to them.
If someone came all over those muffins, there would certainly be comeuppance for that.
See, okay. That's where I mix them up in my brain all the time.
So outside the bookstore, Marco makes a Teletubbies reference. He's like, hey, while we're in there, somebody grab me like a Lala or whatever the one the yellow one is. I can't remember.
It is Tinky Winky, Dipsy, Lala, and Poe. Lala is the yellow one.
Rachel's still in charge. She's very defensive about being in charge and is kind of being a jerk about it. I can't remember what someone says, but someone says something, and she's like, I thought I was the one giving the orders here. And it's like, okay, all right, all right, all right.
This, all right, never mind, continue.
I told you I was frustrated in this book.
Yeah, I can see why. I can see why.
So, they bust up the bookstore, which at some point, Cassie's like, can we do this quick? This feels wrong. Like, a bookstore feels like a place we shouldn't fuck up. Like, it's like church, right. You know? Like, it's a bookstore. They similarly threaten the known manager.
Technically, a church is just a bookstore for religious books. Yeah, sure. You know what I mean? So,
There's always a bookstore attached to the church.
Always.
Yeah, so they similarly threaten the manager of this bookstore, who they know to be a controller. They also terrify a mom and a young kid in this time. None of them have a heart attack or anything. But, like, there's a young kid in there that, like, is so terrified of this fucking rampage happening around them. After the bookstore is a salon co-owned by Mrs. Chapman. And after this one, Rachel is, or at this time, Rachel's feeling good. She's getting to call the shots. She's getting to have the team be aggressive. She even thinks that Jake might be a little bit jealous when he comes back to see how well things are going. And maybe he'll want to take a well-deserved break from being the leader.
Her inkling or her instinct to be this violent mm-hmm. so quickly might be what the weakness is of the team.
Mm.
Yeah, like a character weakness.
So they fuck up the salon, and at this time, they just walk right in the front door in their battle morphs. They just ding, 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 ding. Receptionist looks up and literally faints at the desk. And then they fuck everything up in the salon.
Sure.
And then the sporting goods store. And then the bank.
What? But what are, like, is it because controllers work at these places?
Yes.
That's not...
And every time they go, they fuck up the place very publicly and noticeably so that the Yerks will have a hard time covering all this up. And then they tell the Yerk in charge, tell Visser 3 we mean business. You know, like, so this is very clearly, like, this is because Visser 3 sucks. This is because he can't control us as Andalites. And this is going to look bad on his grade, on his mid-year review.
Don't mess with the bull. If you mess with the bull, you're going to get the horns. There are some hornies coming for these kids eventually.
You mean Hork-Bajir? Hork-Bajir?
No, hornies, David. Horns.
So after the bank, they see Vice Principal Chapman walk into a cigar store.
Yeah, of course he does.
And they go, let's fuck that place. So they do. And they make a lot of jokes of, like, smoking's bad for you. Like,
they do. Yeah, justify their looting and arsonery.
The rampage continues. A fitness center with Yerk trainers. A Kinko's with the manager being a controller. A big law firm where all three partners are known controllers. And the private residence of a judge.
Okay, this is getting bad.
So after all of this, this is all in one day, one right after the other.
You know that the local town is just going to be like, we need better animal control. There are news stories definitely going to be happening about this. Yeah, of course.
So eventually, Rachel sets her sights on the community center. If you remember, the Yerks recently built a community center. Big community center is a big to-do. That was the place where Tobias was tortured almost to death.
Yes, okay. Yeah, that place is dark.
Which they realized this is a dangerous target. All the rest of it, these are like storefronts and, like, you know, a place. This is Yerk territory, right?
They've got guns, they've got alien technology, they have laser beams.
Yeah. And as they split up to, like, check the place around, make sure they're not being followed, kind of bird morph around and scope things out a little bit, and then they're going to meet back in, like, a nice safe space near the place to, like, morph and go. Rachel and Cassie walk by an electronics store with, like, the news on the TVs in the window. And it's the news about the attacks happening around town.
Is this where they find out that old man died?
And one of the things that she sees, like images of, like, the animals on, like, security cameras, like, busting through places and stuff. But then she sees one little note on the bottom, you know, the lower third. Quote, one man dead in attack on TV station, visiting his grandson from Kansas, heart disease patient succumbs.
Oh,
what? And at that moment, Rachel sees that.
Is succumbing like the comeuppance? Are they related to each other?
No, succumbing is the comeuppance.
So technically, she has blood on her hands.
Yes, and she feels it. In that moment, she goes, and Cassie sees it, obviously, also, because they're together at this moment. So they meet back with the others in Birdmorph, and Cassie tells Rachel in private thought speak, "You need to tell them right now, or I will." And so she does. She tells them, "Hey,
hey, team, take a knee. I got something to tell you.
That old man did die of a heart attack." And everyone's kind of quiet for a minute. and then where do I have to? Okay. Well, that's nice, Marco said finally. That's just beautiful. The man's death is unfortunate. Perhaps it was even avoidable, but there is nothing we can do to change the fact of it. Axe, of course. Tobias? I was glad Cassie spoke to him. I wasn't sure I could. I felt uncomfortable. He'd seen potential trouble. He told me to get us out of the studio. I had said no. I'd been having too good of a time. All clear so far, he reported from the high oak branch on which he perched as our most experienced lookout. He didn't comment on the old man. He didn't even look at me or say he was sorry for me.
I forgot that there's an alternate Rachel that's a murderer, right? Like,
didn't the future Rachel?
Yeah.
Well, we had the time where she split her personality into, like, violent and scaredy Rachel.
Right, but didn't we see one
A possible future. The Elemist showed them a possible future if they failed, where Rachel was a controller, became a controller.
Okay. Continue. All right, read your quote. I apologize.
It's okay. Look, I said, suddenly angry. It wasn't my fault. We all agreed to do this mission. Nobody forced anybody. We all agreed. Hit them hard. Scare them. Attack. I'm sorry the guy died, but Rachel, Cassie cut me off. Nobody's saying it's your fault. It's what they're not saying, I muttered. And then I felt even angrier. We were doing a good job so far. And I was the leader. It was my place to keep us doing a good job. My duty. No one could ever blame me for not doing my duty. You know what? I went on. The Yurks are spooked. We've got them right where we want them. Good. Great. Mission accomplished, Marco snapped. No, not yet. And that was Rachel saying, no, not yet. So.
I mean, they do. I don't feel like they have anybody spooked. I feel like they've scared a bunch of normal people. And what's going to happen is...
The Yurks will know that shit's going on, but like, yeah.
Listen, they're throwing up gang signs all over town. The other gang is going to approach them eventually. Yep.
So Tobias then reports that there's some kind of meeting happening in the community center. A lot of people are inside in a building. You can kind of see through these windows. And I think it's one of those rooms where it's like... The room is kind of underground, but the windows, like, at the top of the room, like, peek out to the ground level. You know what I mean?
Sure, yeah.
So Tobias reports that there are people inside. They're having a meeting. Everyone looks fairly nervous in that room, right? Clearly, this is, like, an emergency meeting to talk about what the fuck is happening. And there are a lot of unknowns about the situation. Where or if Visser 3 is here... Or if that inspector is here.
Inspector 14.
Yeah. How many controllers are in the building? How many Hork-Bajir are in the building? Because this is like fucking Yurk Zone. They likely suspect that something will happen. So surprise is not as big as an advantage as it has been the rest of the day. So the group is very hesitant on this particular one. And Marco sees it as unnecessary. Cassie says, let's wait for Jake. Right? Like, so they're like, all right, good idea, but, like, we don't have to hit this place today, right? We've done our job. And so when Cassie then says, like, well, what if we, like, wait for Jake? Like, what if we don't?
And Rachel says, I'm the leader. You do as I say.
Rachel says, you too, Cassie? I wished I were human so I could make a sound of disgust. You people kill me. Every attack so far has been a success, and you want to blow it now? By the time we check out the building, the meeting could break up and everyone could be gone. What then? Rachel... No one says no to Jake, I challenged. Suddenly I'm leader and it's okay to be all rebellious and mutiny? I don't think so. You chose me as leader. I got us through today, okay? Didn't I? Another weird silence. Did Jake have to deal with these weird silences? She's right, Tobias said. We chose her. More silence. At least no one turned or flew away. Look, I said. The inevitable pre-battle excitement building in spite of the lack of enthusiasm and support the others were showing. This is going to be fantastic. The last raid of the day. We'll leave the Yurks with an experience they'll never forget. I looked around my wary group of feathered warriors, imagined a hugely grinning, glittery-eyed, adrenaline-soaked look on my own human face, and said, if you guys are really that worried, we'll go in with maximum firepower. We all go in as polar bears.
Just because of the power of the polar bears? Or to confuse them?
I think mostly just because she's like, look, if you're feeling worried about it, let's just be like the strongest shit we all have.
Okay.
A pack of five polar bears going into a room, right?
Yeah.
And they're all like, why? Like, why wouldn't we just be our normal battle morphs? We know them way better. We're way more comfortable in them, you know? And Rachel is too worked up, and so she forces the point and says she's right. She's the leader. Polar bears it is. So they morph polar bears. There's a comment that they smell McDonald's somewhere because they're very good at, like, smelling food.
Sure.
This is where Cassie reveals that secretly she loves the filet of fish.
Oh, weird. Okay, yeah, it's a delicious sandwich. They use special fish.
So before they go, Tobias makes the point of saying, remember, these are controllers, but they're still people. We are not trying to hurt or kill anyone. And Rachel feels really mad because he's saying that to everybody, but it's very clear that this is a pointed comment at her, right?
Right. Well, technically she has killed a person already, so take the note.
So they bust in through one of these windows in the room with the meeting, a few feet off the floor of the room, like 6 feet off the floor of the room or so. And they start throwing shit around, knocking people over, causing chaos, doing the shit they're doing. Hork-Bajir starts showing up, right? And Rachel is like, we can fucking take Hork-Bajir, no problem, we're a bunch of polar bears. So they start fighting, and overall, the fight's going fine, until a super fast blue blur streaks through the room, running circles around all these polar bears that can't fucking touch it, can barely see it, knocking them all off balance, and starts hitting them, dizzying them so that other controllers can, like, shoot them with guns or slash them with Hork-Bajir blades. So the fight starts going very badly, very quickly, and everyone is getting really fucked up. Visser 3 arrives, and the inspector goes, here, you can clean this up. I, like, set this up for you. It should be fine, right? Oh, and as a side note, whenever the inspector talks, there are no spaces between the words in his sentences. It's just because he's talking so fast that, like...
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. The Visser starts to morph. The Visser had begun to morph to some massive, horrible thing. From his proud Andalite body shot folds of gray skin, flaps of stinking flesh piled on top of one another, layer upon layer, like pudding dumped from a bowl. Skin like buckets of quicksand slapped onto 6, 7, 8 foot monster. Eyes like tiny rotted raisins, arms and legs like columns of poured mud 2 feet around, a stomach that roiled out like a wave and slapped onto the floor that kept on growing, the skin that oozed an outrageously foul stench, think sewer and then corpse. What little air there was in that small, overcrowded room was already stale with the odors of sweat and blood, boiling with the heat of so many bodies. The Visser's reeking morph made breathing almost impossible, and the heat! My body felt bloated with it. My skin stretched over layers of dense blubber. My fur coat felt like a heavy lead blanket the doctor drapes over you before pointing an x-ray machine at your chest. Oppressive. Too late, I realized that the polar bear, an animal that expends twice the amount of energy at a given speed than any other mammal, an animal covered in layers of insulating blubber, was not the morph for this job. Too hot. Can't breathe. And guys, I'm bleeding pretty bad, said Tobias. Perhaps we should have chosen our usual battle morphs, Axe said, unnecessarily, his voice grim. We are all one thing with no flexibility. We must withdraw.
Yeah, I mean, that was always the point of...
having different animals.
The strength of the five animals, right? The X-Men aren't all just five Wolverines. You got a Cyclops guy. You got a psychic
lady. If you want five Wolverines, go read X-Force.
Right, well, that's basically right. Yeah.
So Rachel basically is like, okay, everybody get out of here. I will hold off Visser 3 while you escape. Which I think that's a good leader quality in someone.
Sure.
She can't hurt it at all. She's like swiping at this thing and it's like, bah, I'm like goopy. So it very easily just like flicks her across the room, like flies across the room and into the wall. This is like a polar bear, like a 1500 pound polar bear.
Right. Put the dent in the wall.
Yeah. So she very hazily scans the room as she gets up after hitting the wall, and she looks around, and she doesn't see any of the other polar bears. Everybody made it out of the room. So she bails out the window, barely making it herself. Finally out, she looks around, she sees Marco, Axe, Tobias. She does not see Cassie.
Oh no, where's Cassie?
Cassie was still in the room, and she just didn't see her. So now they're all back at the barn...
And they've now captured one of them who is going to be tortured like they tortured Tobias.
They, at the barn, Cassie has about 75 minutes left before her morph is permanent.
Mm.
Right? And so They're wondering what to do. Marco is fucking furious and, like, really kind of lets Rachel have it. Like, it's just like, listen, this is all your fucking fault. You didn't listen to us. You made bad choices, and now Cassie is fucked. And now, since Cassie is fucked, we're all probably fucked, and the world is probably fucked because they're going to infest her and learn everything.
We hear a car pulling up in the driveway. Prince Jake walks into the barn.
No, sir. And Marco starts, like, yelling at her so much that even Axe is like, Marco, chill the fuck out. This isn't helping. You know? But he starts yelling at her so much that Rachel starts crying, which even makes Marco more mad. He's like, fine, yeah, cry. Make us feel bad for you. Like, this is all your fault. You can't get out of it this easy, you know? Tobias is like, okay, well, whatever we're yelling at each other for, we have to deal with this now. Like, this is now the problem that we have. And Rachel is like, okay, well, then I'm going to go to the Yerk Pool. They figured they brought Cassie to the Yerk Pool to infest her. She's like, I'll go to the Yerk Pool alone. You all don't need to sacrifice yourself. I'll do it myself. I'll just go. It's my fault. And justifiably, everybody is like, yeah, that's a terrible idea.
Right. We are the Justice League. Batman, why don't you continue working with the group?
Yeah. And Rachel's like, well, Cassie went to the Yerk Pool by herself once. And they're like, yeah, because we were all sick and dying, and she was the only one awake. Like, you know, like.
Right.
So basically, Rachel's like, well, then fuck this. I quit. You wanted Marco, you wanted to be leader so bad, you be leader. And she storms out of the barn. And Marco follows her out and gives her a little bit of tough love, which is, I really like this part. No, he said. What do you mean, no? Don't want to have to deal with my mess, I said flatly, brushing away a final tear and pretending it was a speck of dirt. I understand that. It's a no-win situation, and you're nothing if not pragmatic, Marco. Marco nodded. You're right about that. Lousy odds for success, and I am pragmatic. The odds are always lousy, but Jake beats the odds. Yeah, we're lucky to have Jake, but he's screwed up too. Your pity isn't really helping me, Marco. Jake never walks out. Jake never quits. Yeah, well, goody for Saint Jake. You're the one who didn't want me in charge. Why not just take your big victory and be happy? The Animorphs are all yours until Almighty Jake comes home. Look, I can't lead, Marco says. Not right now. This isn't my mission. Maybe someday I'll be in charge. If I am, I'll probably screw up. Like I said, even Saint Jake blows it sometimes. What makes you so special anyway? Yeah, well then it's your turn to screw up. I'm gone. Marco grabbed my arm. I jerked it away. He looked as angry as I was. Listen to me, you mall-crawling psycho. We have 1 hour and 10 minutes to get Cassie out of the Yerk Pool. Now, I can come up with a clever plan. I can work all the angles. I can see the perfect solution. But all that takes time. We don't have time, Rachel. We don't have time for clever and subtle. We need reckless. We need impulsive. We need dangerous. We need out-of-your-mind, pure adrenaline, butt-kicking, total out-there insanity. He stabbed his finger in my face. We could have used me back at the community center, but right now we need you. We have an hour to save your best friend, Jake's girlfriend, and the entire human race. You got us into this. Now get us out.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Crazy Reckless got this into this. Crazy Reckless is
going to be... We could have used my plans now, right. But the time for that is over. So, right. So now you've got to run the show. And so Rachel rejoins the barn, a little embarrassed, asks Tobias for any intel on Yerk Pool entrances that he's got to share, because he's always looking out for that shit. There is a possible new entrance for ships in a dummy office building recently built with a retractable roof that is not common in human buildings.
Sure, it was a big spot for him.
But it would take too long to fly to, infiltrate, and rescue if that was indeed... a correct assumption that that's an entrance to the Yerk Pool. Like, we can't go there, scope it out, go in as flies, remorph as a thing. Like, we don't have time for that.
Right. They have to get in and get her out.
So, someone says, well, I think Rachel says, it doesn't take an hour for a bug fighter to get into the Yerk Pool. And someone's like, well, we don't have a bug fighter. And then Rachel goes, oh, I have an insane idea. So, we cut to a small private airport, like private/corporate jet airport.
Sure.
As humans. Everyone, including Axe, are humans outside the, like, fences to this little airport. They wait until the guards/dogs are, like, far enough away from where they are. And then they climb the fence and sprint to a private jet. And they, as they're running to it, Rachel is like, man, I hope these people have insurance. And then she looks at the jet and sees that it's owned by Philip Morris. And she goes, okay, yeah, they've got insurance.
That's a second smoking jab in one book.
I know. So they get to this jet and, like, shut the door as they go inside, but they were spotted. So, like, people are, like, running towards this fucking jet.
Right.
Now, remember, this is the 90s. So I want to preface this whole scene with this is the 90s.
Totally heard. There's been no national tragedies about hijacking. This is a pre-9/11 world. This is a pre-9/11 world. Okay.
So Axe starts to demorph because he's going to fly the plane out. And I have just to read one sentence, basically, because we get a little bit of Axe sarcasm that I love. Marco says, are you sure you understand the concept of takeoff, Axeman? Axe swiveled his stock eyes and gave Marco a look of disdain. I imagine that I will be able to comprehend this highly sophisticated human technology, he said dryly. So as they start down
flips
the runway...
Flips it on, no problem. Yeah. Pulls back, takes
it'd be really funny if he does all that and then is like... Oh, fuck, I forgot to take off the parking brake, you know? Like... so as they start down the runway, a fucking deer runs out into the middle of the runway and then, like, freezes in the headlights of this jet. So he dodges around it, but then they lost some speed and distance on the runway, and they probably don't have enough time or distance to, like, clear the runway, right? And so Rachel makes the decision, fuck it, try it, push our luck, right?
Right.
So they do, and they barely get off the ground before the end of the runway. They take off, and they head towards this new building that got built by the Yerkes.
Right.
So they get 7,000 feet above what is called the Bean Tower. That's this building, the Bean Tower. Axe puts the plane into a steep, almost 90-degree dive straight at the building. Dude. The kids are about to pull a 9/11.
I mean, it wasn't a 90-degree angle, but that's pretty crazy.
They're about to fly a plane into a building.
Okay.
So, dives the plane, starting straight at it. Rachel takes over the controls to hold the plane steady, while the others morph bird. They opened a cabin door, and they morph bird and basically let themselves get sucked out of the plane into the air and then are flying fine. Rachel has to hold the plane steady until it's, like, going to hit the building, because otherwise it could, like, veer off and hit, like, who knows what in the fucking city.
Right, it could hit that Tower 13, even though no rubble hit it, it just went down for some reason.
So she holds the plane until it's, like, really close, and then she lets go, and as a human who starts to morph Bald Eagle, gets sucked out of the door of the plane and is falling as a person, like, after this plane. This scene is so fucking insane. So she's still mostly human as she tumbles out. I have in my notes, straight up, the jet explodes into the building. She's morphing, but still not done, falling. Falls through the hole created by the jet, following it down through the building while still morphing Bald Eagle. All the way through the ceiling of the Yerk Pool, the big-ass cavern. Boom! Plane crashes through there. Fiery jet lands into the Yerk Pool itself, probably killing thousands of Yerks. Rachel, fully Eagle.
Yeah. This is the Yerkes 9/11. This is a tragedy.
She straight up pulls a 9/11 in this book.
Is going to unite these aliens against the
Angelites. I wanted to get to this part so bad because I was like, listen, it's a war and everything, but this is...
Is it a war?
We stole a plane, hijacked a plane, and then flew it into a building.
A small group of individuals, I guess, has called a jihad on these guys, so okay.
So, Rachel, who barely makes Fully Eagle, manages to pull up just in time. So I want to just... She falls out of a jet as it crashes into a building, and then falls through the hole that created, and then morphs Eagle just in time to fly up. All of her mistakes in this book aside, that is one of the coolest things I've seen in this series so far.
David, to do that stunt, it's not like she was falling like, whoa! She had to Tom Cruise her body, gaining
while
speed,
concentrating on morphing into a bird.
To then bird morph so she could then pull off at the last second, just like Tom Cruise in Top Gun 2.
Of all people in the group, she's the one crazy enough to do that fucking shit, right? Like... knock her all you want for, like, her fucking tactical acumen in these times. Like, Rachel is the most badass person in the entire fucking crew.
That's pretty fucking badass.
Yeah. So she starts looking through all the chaos in the Yerk pool that has now erupted as an eagle, spots a polar bear chained with a chain on each leg, surrounded by three Hork-Bajir guards, one of which that has a blade to her throat.
Right.
And there's maybe like 5-10 minutes left, like in her morph time before she's stuck forever as a polar bear. So Rachel dives the one with the blade for her throat, warning Cassie ahead of time in thought speak, like, hey, I'm coming down for you right now. Like, don't give it away. And then so she you know, rakes at that one and then, like, re-dives at the other one and notices, and this is a badass thing about Cassie that's a little more subtle, Cassie slowly demorphs from the polar bear here in the open, but controls it so it's just slow enough and controls that she's the thing that morphs first is just her size. So she starts to shrink down out of the shackles, gets out, and then remorphs back to full polar bear.
So she goes from normal polar bear to Coca-Cola polar bear back to regular polar bear.
Correct. A squad of Hork-Bajir run up, and they're going to have to try and fight out of them 2v5, basically, because the others were still outside. They didn't follow through the hole like Rachel did.
Yep.
So the Hork-Bajir that run up are halted by Visser 3, who announces very loud to everyone, "You are very lucky to be here today, Inspector. We have captured another Andalite traitor for your entertainment." The inspector is there, the Visser is there, and they kind of quibble a little bit. Visser 3 is like, if you think it's so easy to deal with these Andalite bandits, here's two of them, kill these, right? And the inspector's like, that is too easy, not even a challenge, don't even fucking worry about it. And so the fight starts, Cassie can't touch the thing, it's too fast. Rachel climbs hard into the air to try to dive at it, because she's like, oh man, these bald eagles can, like, catch fish out of a rushing river, like, this should be okay. Goes to dive the Garatron while it attacks Cassie, but gets got. Gets knocked out of the air as a bald eagle. But then the cavalry arrives. From the hole in the ceiling comes a red-tailed hawk and a harrier carrying a cobra between them.
Great.
More glib insults fire back and forth between Visser 3 and the inspector, who keeps insisting that he call them counselor. And he's like, and Visser 3 is like, oh, if you defeat these Andalite bandits, I will call you counselor. I will even resign in disgrace if you can do that.
Right.
Like basically, like, motherfucker, I've been trying to kill these guys forever. Like, yes, correct. And another time when someone was like, well, we'll just go kill Visser 3. The animal was like, yeah, good luck with that. He might be kind of an idiot sometimes, but, like, he's so hard to kill. So Tobias and Axe drop Marco, who is the cobra, onto the pier, because they're all on, like, the pier of the Yerk pool where this fight is happening. The Garatron basically, like, dismisses Marco as, like, whatever. Like, what is that thing going to do to me? I'm so fucking fast. And Axe starts demorphing from his bird to Andalite, while Tobias, like, dives at the inspector to kind of, like, keep it busy. Axe starts fighting the inspector to distract it, but is, like, a little too slow for it. Marco lines up perfectly and just waits, and then, fast as a cobra, strikes at just the right time and bites the inspector's leg.
Cheetahs die to snake bites. Yeah, you're not immune to those things.
The Garatron starts slowing. Even its speech that it starts having, the words start coming much, much slower. Starts stumbling around. The Animorphs take the opportunity to, like, start to bail. Cassie, like, jumps into the water of the pool.
And because of its speed, the snake poison is working its way through the blood system. Probably a really fast metabolism,
fast circulatory system. So Cassie dives into the pool, knowing she has only moments left before she's stuck as a polar bear. Demorphs in the pool, remorphs to Osprey, which has, like, waterproof feathers and can fly out of the pool fine. And then they start to leave. Tobias picks up Marco as the cobra to fly him out of there, and then they all start to leave. Then, this is kind of fucked up.
It's about to get fucked up.
The inspector fell to his knees and then rolled over onto his side. I rose into the air with difficulty and watched the Garatron's legs straighten and stiffen. The ring of Hork-Bajir guards stood still, silent and unmoving, not going to the inspector's aid, not making any attempt to stop Axe from finishing his morph, not preventing Tobias from swooping down to grab Marco in his talons. Too afraid to infuriate the Visser by turning their attention to the polar bear in the Yerk pool, but the Visser was watching and noticing everything. Inspector, he cried, look, the Andalite bandits are getting away. You must go after them.
Frothing and foaming at the mouth on the ground.
I cannot move, the inspector responded weakly, haltingly. Yes, and very, very soon you will not be able to breathe, Visor 3 said, matter-of-factly. I will be sure to pass along your farewells to the council, my dear inspector. Sloop Cassie, rising from the sludgy gray yerk pool as a seagull. Come on, I cried, already giddy with the sense of victory, no matter how bizarre it was or what strange way it had been gained. We were going home, all of us. So, really kind of fucked up that Visor 3 just like, nobody help him, nobody help him. Yeah. And then just like watches as this guy dies to the snake poison and is like, sorry, bro, I'll let everyone know you said bye, you know? Like,
to be fair, though, what we've learned about the hierarchy of this council is that exactly it is a dog-eat-dog world. This is absolutely par for the course.
Yep.
Okay.
And it's so in the Visser's wheelhouse to be like, first of all, like, to challenge the inspector to be like, yeah, you fight these things. See, it's not so tough. But at the same time, knowing how tough it is to fight the Animorphs is probably like, oh, they'll probably kill the inspector. Like,
yeah.
You know? Like
yeah.
It's probably in his acceptable parameters of this new plan he has, I'm just like, oh, the enemy of my enemy is my friend in this case, right?
Well,
like,
you just took my lesson, Dave, and I wrote that down already. Keep going. Now I can't say that lesson at the end.
All right. So after that, Rachel looks up the grandson of the guy who died and called that kid's mom and said that she was also there at the studio that day, and, like, this whole experience has left her, like, in such a way.
Your grandfather fought bravely that day.
And she says, somehow she gave me permission to speak to her son. He was about Sarah's age. Sarah is her little sister.
Right.
Excuse me. Oh, my. Sarah is her little sister. He was okay with the death now. At least he seemed okay. I think he was kind of weirded out by having to talk to this strange blonde girl while his mother watched and listened intently, making sure I wasn't a wacko here to hurt her kid, I guess. I'm sorry, I finally said. The kid shrugged. Okay. And then he looked up at me. Why? I tried to smile. I stood up. I just am, I guess. I have to go now. I raced out of that house so fast and ran straight into Jake, waiting at the end of the driveway. You're back. Jake raised an eyebrow. Oh, you noticed? Your powers of observation are really amazing, Rachel. I grimaced and we turned towards our own neighborhood. You heard? I asked, afraid of the answer. Jake smiled. Got home late last night. My dad turned on the late news. They're talking about escaped wild animals busting up a TV studio, a bunch of other places, a private jet doing a swan dive into a high rise. That all sounded like maybe some people I knew were involved. It was a big day. I figured I'd better call Cassie. She told me some of it. I talked to Marco, and he told me some more. They both said you'd probably want to tell me some stuff yourself. I don't want to tell you anything, I admitted, but I guess I have to. I screwed up big time. He walked in silence beside me for a while. How many Animorphs were there when you started? 6. And now? Still 6. Yeah, I didn't get anyone killed. Well, that's the first thing to do, you know. Don't get anyone killed. If it makes you feel any better, the others think you did pretty well. Do they? I thought for a moment, kept my eyes forward. We failed to get rid of the Visser. Like Tobias said, we're back to the evil we know. Jake laughed. Yeah, well, Rachel, the Visser's hard to get rid of. Doesn't mean we stop trying, he added. I know. Hey, maybe the Yerks will reconsider the Garatron's usefulness as hosts, I said hopefully, at least for combat. I wouldn't be too sure we've seen the last of them. Well, aren't you, Mr. Optimistic, I said, feeling a little deflated. Like the little bit of glory I'd taken away from the whole episode was not worth very much after all. You did good, Rachel, Jake said simply. You did what you had to do. I stopped walking. I looked at Jake. How do you do this? How do you make decisions that may get people killed? How do you live with that? It's a war, he said. We do what we have to do because we're forced to do it, right? Someday, it will all be over. Someday, the Andalites will come. Or the Yerks will decide we're not worth it. Someday, we'll win. Maybe, but how do you make decisions that get your friends hurt, that maybe someday will get us killed? How do you keep it from getting inside your head and just eating away at you? And then I saw something strange on his face. For just a fleeting moment, it was the face of a terrified kid on the edge of tears. It shocked me. I knew what I was seeing. It was my face when I'd realized the old man had died, my face when I thought I lost Cassie forever. But then the mask came back down, and he was Jake again. I don't think about it, he lied. We walked on in silence for a few minutes. You okay, Jake said, finally? I shook my head, as if to shrug off the question. Yeah, you know. Jake? We made a left at the end of the block and started to walk toward home, the setting sun at our backs. Yeah? Don't ever, ever go away again. The end.
It's a little shorter of a book.
Yeah.
In
yeah.
that
like didn't yeah. have it doesn't any get complicated.
Of, like, well, they never did the okay, what are all the ins and outs of the mission? Because they just mm-hmm. did the mission.
Yeah.
And
I guess, yeah, with Rachel in charge, it's like, don't worry about the plan. Just go.
yeah.
Yeah.
And maybe they should do more planning in the future.
Rachel certainly learned a lesson today.
Yeah, and it also speaks, it also is a reinforcing of why Jake is the leader. And
yeah, shows... a lot of times in the series, we get the comment from other people of like, Jake's the leader of our group. I don't really know why we decided Jake was. We kind of just did. Like, that's always the... Yeah.
This book is exactly why Jake is the
yep.
leader.
Yep.
And we'll probably... Those thoughts will come to fruition later on. Because this definitely does have big events.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering when this spills over to the larger world. Because, like... People are going
to
find
that's
out.
That's a lot I mean, of shit to try to like, keep under wraps.
A lot of shit
yeah.
to keep under wraps. So I wonder what ramifications that will have later on.
Yeah.
The ramifications of this story, though.
The comeuppance, you mean.
Thank you. Is they're fresh out of the oven, hot and steamy. Don't touch them. They need to cool. That being said, let me teach you my lessons.
Lessons.
Now, this is more of a 90s lesson, but it happened sure. right at the beginning of the book. Bring extra batteries on family vacations.
Yes.
You don't know where you're going to be. Your Game Boy, your CD player is going to die in the middle of nowhere. You're going to be uber bummed.
Minimum
bring those extra.
An extra 8-pack of double A's.
Bare absolutely. Minimum. You only need 4, but you're going to go through all of them yep. by playing Tetris.
Yep.
Get a calendar. Just no dates in advance. Get one. Keep your life. Know what's going on. You can't just do things willy-nilly. I wrote, lesson I learned is you need to know how your technology works. You can't just wing it, okay, and expect to figure it out. Spend some time. Take a class. Know what you're doing with your technology.
What was that in reference to? Oh, is that the... No, what was that in reference to?
It's the beginning of the book, David, had something to do with technology. Maybe right. when they were chasing the Viscera around, I don't remember. There was some piece of technology. I wrote, don't get cocky. Listen, they every time
Rachel
they're like...
Rachel was super overconfident in this book.
Anytime yeah. they're like, we got this in the bag, they don't have it in the
and
bag.
And I think a lot of that actually, like a lot of that confidence, and it, you get more of a sense of it when you're like reading through the inner monologue that Rachel's having throughout this book, but like... A lot of it is a defense mechanism. She sees that she made a bad call or that people question a call she's making, and she doubles down so hard because I'm right. I've got to be right.
Titles like Inspector, mm-hmm. Judge, Commander, great name for dogs. Just
oh,
like
okay,
a solid,
sure.
if you were like, this is Sergeant Major, that's a great name for a dog.
Sure,
any
yeah.
of those, if you were like, even, listen, I don't know if anyone's named it, but like Visser 3 is a great name for a dog. No one is going to have that name at the dog park.
Sure, yeah.
Don't insult people's bodies. Listen, you don't know what's going on with them. You don't yeah. know what's happening. Let's have a little a body positivity, okay, folks?
I agree. I don't know where that came up in the story either, but I agree.
Don't hit your balls on the wall. It's going to hurt you.
God
it's going to hurt the wall. You're going to ruin those guys.
I
they
just
need
like
to be,
the phrase balls to the wall. I like
they
it.
They need to be protected, okay, David? The pullout method works sometimes. Marco is able to pull out. I don't feel like this should be an example for everyone to follow, but sometimes it does work based on the literature you just read me.
That's not...
Come to My Window is a really fun 90s song.
Sure,
it's
there
like,
you go.
If you're looking for like a karaoke song to like get the whole audience involved, Come to My Window is a pretty good one. Be careful. Lesson I learned, be careful with collateral damage.
Yeah.
We're calling it collateral damage. What it means is that
oh my God.
Civilians, buildings, other people, non-combatants are bleeding and dying of heart
yeah.
attacks, okay?
And so you shouldn't do those things that cause that to happen.
Funny enough, and causing things to happen, falling kills old people.
Yeah.
Gravity will take you out. Have a cane, have a walker, hold the wall.
Get those little non-slip things for the floor of your shower.
Yes, yes.
I have to get one of those. I don't have one right now, and I have to get one.
Yes, David, you need one, okay? Because if you, if I have to
I live alone now, so, like, there's no one to find me.
If I have to drape that over your coffin as your cat and get the bones out of your cat, I am going to be very upset with you. Don't let power, I mean, it goes with an earlier lesson, don't let power go to your head. Mm-hmm. Just because you're in charge now, this is only for a limited time.
Absolute power corrupts, absolutely.
Don't burn it all down. Listen, there's good things, okay? Let's not just, like, level this to the ground. There's things that we should be saving here. It's a lesson. It's a tough one, especially when in the heat of the moment. Listen to your friends.
Mm.
You might not take their advice, you know,
or even lunch, like what they say. Yeah.
But take it into account. I wrote, don't change horses midstream.
The old George H.W. Bush argument. Huh?
It's from the movie Wag the Dog. Listen, they have battle morphs for a reason. They understand how that works. You're doing, yes, there are missions when we all have to be hammerheads, but that's because there isn't another way out. Let people be comfortable with their choices.
Sure.
David, take the note. Just take the note. Why are you arguing? Just take the note and move on, right? I learned the lesson, you can never get the smell of corpse out of your nose.
Sure.
They described it like sewage with corpses, mm-hmm. which means they know what corpses smell like.
All of these kids are well aware of what death smells like.
I wrote, be careful not to dent your walls. When you're moving shit, like, protect your walls, because that's all going to come out of your deposit. If you start getting ball marks on those walls are going to, it's going to cost you a pretty penny.
On that note about the smell of death, like, and what these kids have experienced, like, we talk about it now and then when we're, like, talking about these episodes. They describe constantly in these books, like, when they're in these fights, I'm like, okay, they battle for a while, and then it's going fine, but then it starts to go bad, and then they leave. When I say it starts to go bad, it's like, there are pieces of them hacked off. There's blood everywhere. There's guts pouring out of Hork-Bajir and Taxons. More than once, all of these people, like Marco, as in Gorilla Morph, has been, like, gut shot or stabbed, like, 18 times throughout this series. Like,
and even though the damage isn't permanent,
they feel it. They know it.
Yeah. Felt what getting stabbed feels like.
And has to, like, keep fighting through all that.
Well, and specifically to fighting, yelling doesn't solve all problems.
Ah.
Just because you raised your voice and got loud doesn't mean we're coming to a better solution faster.
Yeah.
Calmer heads will prevail. Let's talk about this in a normal tone of voice. I wrote, use the right tool for the right job.
There you go.
Yes, you can use a Miley Cyrus wrecking ball, but maybe sometimes you need to be like a Christina Aguilera and get inside of those, like, nuances of this relationship, okay?
I thought you were going to make another. What's the? You had me up until the last example of it fell apart. I know.
I didn't think that went through. I just, the note I wrote was use the right tool for the right job, and then I went off the reservation.
I just wish there was. Yeah, I just wish there was a one on off the top of my head that was like something about sticking
listen,
together.
Come together. Yeah, you got to be like the turtles. I don't know. Well, let's keep going. I wrote the lesson learned, and we learned it because we watched this tragedy live on television. Everything has changed post 9/11.
Yeah.
It's difficult to explain that to younger folks. They don't know about that world. We only had a glimpse of it, but
while I was reading this, I was like, they stole a jet from this place, and I was like, oh my god, modern day, there are 8 F-16s, like, scrambling right now at the nearest Air Force base.
Did you know that the original ending of Lilo and Stitch was they steal an airplane and they had to change it to an alien ship because 9/11 just happened?
Yeah.
You can see the animatics. It's like, oh, okay, that's traumatic. let's keep down this 9/11 rabbit hole. Don't fuck around on planes. If you fuck around, you're gonna find out. Don't do it. Stay safe. Don't tamper with the smoke detectors. No smoking.
Don't open the doors.
Now, I don't want to get too conspiratorial on everyone. But we should investigate 9/11. I do not feel that enough answers have come to pass.
There's a whole book on it, man. There was a whole commission report.
David, they ran those planes into those buildings and found their passports just on the ground.
Yeah.
Just found them on the ground.
Yeah, yeah. I have an off-air story to tell you about the phrase "jet fuel can't melt steel beams."
Oh Jesus!
Okay. I don't think I can. I'll have to think about whether or not I can tell that on this show right now. But it's,
I'll listen to it and then let everybody. I'll just spring it on you the way that I do with everything else.
It's one of my favorite stories, but I'll have to. Yeah, I have to.
I wrote, "Don't criticize what you don't understand. If you don't know, get some more information." I then wrote, "It's a lesson I learned from this book. It's always politics. Even in the middle of a war, we're still dealing with home front and politics behind the scene." I then wrote the lesson that David stole out of my mouth. The enemy of my enemy is always my friend.
Sure is.
And then lastly, which I think something the kids have learned, and I also think Visser has learned, that sometimes the devil you know is better than the devil you don't know.
Yeah, the Animorphs have had that like thought multiple times throughout the series, because there have been a couple opportunities where they're like, well, what if we can like fuck it up so that Visser 3 gets fired and someone else comes in, and they're like, yeah, but what if that person is like worse? We know Visser 3 and how he's weak and how he's not, so that's like way easier to deal with.
They know his weaknesses, they know his strengths,
yeah,
and they kind of know the way his brain works.
Exactly. They know like once they do something, they know what he's probably going to do in response, right?
Right. And that being said, I also know the way that David Brains works, and I also know the way that his child bladder works, so we need to wrap this episode here.
How did you know I had to pee so bad?
I can see that you're doing a weird like dance. You're doing like a little shimmy dance. It's like, that's your pee dance.
I do have to pee. That's right.
I do. You stay very well hydrated, as should all of you. That being said, the one that's well hydrated, well, that's David Miller.
And the one that needs to get a couple more water bottles down his gullet, well, that's Michael Santel.
Thank you so much for joining us. We have hot takes and tales coming your way, but we'll save them for another day. We'll see all you kids and cats next time.
Okay, bye.
That's our show. Thanks for coming round. Don't be sad. No need to frown. We'll have more stories. Don't throw a fit. Goodbye, one and all, and we'll see you in a bit. And thank you for flying American. Bing bong.